to you on the internet, on the telephone, on anything you have. And you need to say, this is not a punishment sent by God because I'm bad. This is a disease, and understand how it happened, and talk to people. Talk to people, have contact with people. If you live with someone, hug them, hold them, give each other physical touch and physical comfort. If you don't, reach out however you can. Reach out by having friends have a discussion on the internet, on Google Chat or whatever, where they share feelings and needs and reactions to this crisis.
I wish we had more time.
Me too. Nice touch.
And all of you, not only thank you for joining us, but do join us in yet another way. This could have and should have been foreseen, planned for, and handled with an awareness and a sensitivity, not just to the economics of our lives, but to the most intimate personal qualities of our present and our future. We've had a breakdown of the system, and it's the key thing to learn from. And I look forward to speaking with you again next week.
All right, people. So the previous program was Economic Update with Richard Wolf. And that's heard right after the WBAI Evening News on Wednesdays at 6:30 p.m. And if you hear what's playing under me, it is clapping. It is an audience out there showing appreciation to all essential workers out there, from the supermarket worker to the delivery person, to the postal worker, to the transportation individuals, bus and subway, to the EMT, to the fire department. Everyone who somehow is considered essential and yet does not receive the financial payment that they should receive. This is an opportunity to show your support and appreciation to those individuals right now. So I encourage all the listeners out at WBAI to go out to your windows and clap and show appreciation to all essential workers out there. With that said, this is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned.
And it's 7 o'clock. Time for Off the Hook. But before we start the program, open up your window. Stick your head outside. Listen to some noise. And make some noise. We'll be right back. Very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined by Kyle.
I'm over here.
Yes, and that was quite a bit of noise. Everybody makes noise at 7 o'clock to thank the first responders and all the people in hospitals, doctors, nurses, everybody. It's something to just hang on to hope, you know, hang on to getting through all of this sometime fairly soon.
It's an easy thing to do, and a great reminder of all the neighbors and everybody that's basically holding up and hanging in there, just like you.
Absolutely. We're going to be talking about all that. We're going to try to take phone calls later on. Oh, and I almost forgot, we're being joined tonight by Alex. Is he coming in on Skype?
I am indeed. Good evening, everyone.
How you doing, Alex? Now, are you still holed up in Pennsylvania?
I am indeed, yeah. I am still here, still sort of self-quarantining, still miss my family, my wife, my kids, but I'm better. I mean, look, before I started working from home this morning, I went out on a kayak. I've been going out on a kayak, you know, twice a day now, and 2 weeks ago it was hard for me to walk three houses down the road. So I consider that progress.
Is that because you were sick or are you horrendously out of shape?
You know, it could be a mixture of both.
Okay.
But probably the former rather than the latter. And it was, you know, it's difficult to say, you know, whether it was really affecting my lungs or not. But I think back to 2 weeks ago and how hard it was to do very simple things. And it's quite possible. But again, I don't know. I could just have been fatigued from having some other virus, or maybe it was the dreaded coronavirus.
Well, now we've been talking about your saga over the last how many weeks has it been? 4 weeks? 3 weeks? It's been a while.
About 3 weeks. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you've been in a cabin in Pennsylvania, deep in the woods of Pennsylvania, apparently by water too. And you still don't know to this day if what you had was coronavirus. I mean, that must be frustrating.
It is frustrating because it would be nice to know whether or not I have the antibodies, right? And whether or not, you know, those antibodies could be relevant to or helpful to my family and others who could get this, right? So, you know, I just don't know. I'm very curious about it. But on the other hand, I don't necessarily want to go anywhere near a hospital and get a test, because if I didn't have it, then I could quite possibly get it. So it's, you know, it's a mixed bag about this thing. But I would like to figure out at some point whether or not I have had this. I'm just not in any great rush to do it, because at this point, if I did have it, I should not be contagious anymore. Anyhow,
it's simply incredible though, because it's a relatively simple test. In fact, we have friends of ours from different countries offering to send us tests. That's how this country is looked upon right now, as a place where you can't get basic medical care and find out if you have a deadly disease. It's really frustrating. You should know. You've been away from your family now for practically a month, and you still don't know if what you have was just a cold or something that could be potentially fatal. And there are so many people in this country right now living with that same uncertainty and that same fear of doing the wrong thing, just going outside and touching the wrong thing, or literally breathing in the wrong air. It's scary, but it's also really frustrating. And I've about had enough of it, because it seems like we're just being fed a line of propaganda and not actually getting the answers and the care that we need. And I don't know. Do you see change down the road? Do you think next time we'll get it better?
I don't know. That's such a very, very good question. But with respect to this lack of certainty that we have here, it becomes very difficult for people to plan. It becomes very difficult for people to make normal decisions about what to do with their life. Because if you think about my situation, assuming that this wasn't a mere coincidence and I did have this thing, we need to be absolutely damn sure that I'm not contagious when I go and get my kids and my wife and we reunite, because they are with my in-laws. And my in-laws, they're not the youngest people, you know, in Pennsylvania. They're in their 70s. So God forbid, you know, we spread this over to my wife's parents, it could have life and death consequences. And so we are having to plan and make assumptions about the worst case scenario without having any science, any data, or any kind of test, medical test, to help us along with those decisions.
It's
crazy. It's 2020, and this is the case.
No, it's so true. For 2020, the most cynical and chaotic outcome is seeming to be the standard operating procedure here, which it's really, really unfortunate. Just the testing alone and preparedness as far as getting equipment pre-staged, it took forever to get people to some sort of consensus about whether or not to build things and create stockpiles or distribute them. And now here we are in a state of real panic and tremendous need.
Yeah, you know what gets me, though, is you think a disaster like this, where we're literally talking about tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people in this country dying from something that could have been stopped, nobody's minds seem to be changed as far as, you know, maybe we should change the way we do things. Maybe we should change our current leadership structure, something. I'm not seeing anything to indicate that no matter how bad this gets, people's minds are going to be altered in any way. And that's just, it's frustrating, but in a way it's kind of liberating too, because, you know, why waste any more energy trying to convince people that we're going down the wrong road. I think, you know, if we know we're going down the wrong road, we have to change it, and we have to not count on anybody else to be swayed to that side. I see things, and it's just incredible that other people that I think I can reason with just don't get it and are simply going to continue blaming the same people for something, or just coming up with conspiracies, or being nationalistic, so many things, but never concede that your guy was wrong or incompetent or malicious. I mean, I'm looking at this news story right now, and tell me what you think of this. The headline is Trump says he never read or looked for memo warning of possible coronavirus pandemic. He said this was yesterday. He never read or considered reading a memorandum in which his top trade advisor warned of the need to implement an aggressive containment strategy to prevent the massive loss of life and economic damage from the COVID-19 pandemic. It can't get any more specific than that. And he practically brags about the fact that he never even read it. Now, this document was authored in January by the White House Director of Trade and Manufacturing Policy, Peter Navarro, submitted to the president via National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien, and in it he warned of an increasing probability of a full-blown COVID-19 pandemic that could infect as many as 100 million Americans, with a loss of life as many as 1 to 2 million souls. When asked about the memorandum during a White House press briefing yesterday, Trump said he did not see it. I heard he wrote some memos talking about a pandemic. I didn't see them. I didn't look for them either. He's proud. He's proud of his ignorance. He's proud of his lack of any kind of action taken to prevent this. And people defend him. People literally who are dying from this are defending him. I don't get it. It's like I'm in some parallel universe, or maybe it's a perpendicular universe. I don't know. I just don't feel like I have a grip on whatever reality is masquerading as the truth these days.
I think it's outright shameful, quite frankly, for a leader to go on record and saying, I didn't read a memo about the loss of life in this country that could affect 1 to 2 million souls. I mean, he's obviously touting this as some kind of lack of responsibility, right? I mean, the fact that he didn't read the memo means he wasn't knowledgeable about this particular point, and therefore he should not have had to take precautionary measures to protect the American people because he wasn't aware of it, right? I mean, that's not how you disclaim responsibility. That's called, at least in legal terms, willful neglect. Another term for that would be negligence. I mean, another term for that, if we're talking about, you know, employment law, would be, you know, an offense that could rise to the level of termination.
Yeah, another word for that is murder. That's what I think. That's how I see this.
That's what I meant by, like, the most cynical view. That as dark as this has looked at every vantage, it seems those that have a position of power and relative distance from the rest of the world want to know more about how this might work for them. And that's truly cynical. And yeah. Such a high cost for the believers to gamble with. It's like when you hear the denial or the rationalizations or the righteousness of, like, how dare you question my leader, our leader. It's like you really want to gamble with this. Like, is the cost has not sunk in? Like, that's something. It's a pretty hot to be wrong about it.
The cost doesn't matter. The guy could come in and lob off the grandmother's head or something, and they'd still defend him somehow. They'd still find a way of blaming it on Hillary. You know, it's just, you can't convince people who are this dug in. And they probably think the same thing about us, but you know, I like to think that we have science and facts on our side. This is a catastrophe. This is a disaster. I mean, look at how it played out in China, where it was a catastrophe. We were in northern Canada. We were following this in January. Trump didn't know about it. We knew about it on a train going into First Nations territory in Canada, and they knew about it too. Everybody knew about this. And in China, we were watching the death toll creeping up through the first 100 and eventually reached around 3,000 people. Well, we're well past 3,000 people now. What are we, 14,000, 13,000? And predicted to go so much higher. Why? Why is it so different here? I mean, yeah, we have more freedom to travel, but, you know, we're intelligent people. We should be able to know how to take care of ourselves, how to prevent getting a deadly disease. But our leaders are failing us. There are governors in what, 9-10 states that refuse to tell their citizens to stay at home, that say it doesn't affect us. We're in Arkansas. It doesn't affect people in Arkansas, just people in New York and California. Idiocy like that. And we're seeing it all over the place. And we're seeing it on individual levels as well, where people think that somehow they're immune from it. You walk outside for a second and you see all these people in crowds as if it doesn't matter. You know, and when I say walk outside, I meant just look outside, because walking outside it can be very dangerous if you're not careful, if you're not protected, if you're near other people. We have to take this seriously, and too many of us aren't. And I think the reason we're not is because of the messages we're getting from our leaders, which is not the right message.
And one thing I've observed is in that vacuum of leadership, even the institutions like the National Institute for Health and CDC have done their messaging. And, of course, the task force is doing their press conference as we speak, actually. But what I've noticed in the last 2 or 3 weeks is every single ad agency and brands across the television, online, even the spammers are trying to sell people masks and thermometers and everything they can think of. But the messaging in this country has gotten very clear, and it really is glaring how it really seems to be the leadership and Congress in some ways and some of the states that are resisting the overall guidance and taking it really seriously as far as mobilizing nationally. It's really them that are the outliers in this, because even it, like, every ad in a matter of like 2 weeks switched to customized, speaking to the troubled times we're in, talking about getting together and helping everybody out.
Yeah, these are troubled times. We're very uncertain. So what you need to do is buy a car. That's what I'm seeing constantly, are car ads for these uncertain times. Yeah, who wants to buy a car now?
But that's what I'm saying. That's how ridiculous, like, that's how much this change that we've all had to partake in has been uniform across the board, to the point where, yes, there are brands that are trying to sell stuff in the midst of this, or sell you on the idea of debt in the form of buying a car or whatever other needless item, along with all the stuff that is genuinely helping people, like protective equipment or brands or companies retooling to help a cause charitable organizations, et cetera, on down the line. Everyone is on message except for the leadership and the people that really can mobilize and protect the citizenry and the workers in this country. So it's very glaring from just that observation because, yeah, this country is more than capable of following a model like South Korea or following other countries that have recovered with
Germany. Look at what Germany has done. They have so few cases or so few deaths from the cases they did have compared to other countries because they did testing, because they did surveillance, the medical surveillance that tells how you got something, who you might have transmitted it to. It's intelligence. It's science. You know, I'm looking right now at the TV where Dr. Fauci is speaking. And he should be the person giving these press conferences. Trump needs to get his ass out of there, or somebody needs to get it out for him, because he does not know what he's talking about, but the scientists and the doctors do. Those are the people we should be listening to. Those are the only people we should be listening to. Shouldn't be a political message, should be a scientific medical message, and people need to respect that and follow that. And the fact that we're not seeing, I mean, China is a dictatorship. It's a totalitarian regime. And when you have a situation like that, you can get people to do something that you tell them to do. We're not like that. But we should get people to do the intelligent thing, the right thing. And when you have all these idiots saying that I've got the blood of Jesus on me and I can't be touched by this, that is when the whole thing starts to fall apart. And we need to get past that. We need to, you know, have a nationwide quarantine so that this thing can be stopped before it really spirals out of control.
The leadership in China, I was just going to say, is not as ideologically or politically desperate. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of desperation from this leadership.
Absolutely.
And wanting to spin this in some way that benefits just them.
You know, if you want a really good summation of all the dumbass statements that have been made by people in media, people in government, check out Trevor Noah's The Daily Show Moment of Zen from Monday, this Monday, and you will be blown away by the amount of stupidity that has been peddled, and then you'll see why this has gotten so bad. Because people were saying things like this, saying that it's perfectly okay to go outside, it's not going to affect you, and They are so dead wrong, and we must hold them to that. The fact that they basically didn't care about people's lives, didn't listen to the science, and that's what we have to do is listen to the science.
And doubling down on it and on denying the science and so forth is just going to beget complacency and a lack of effectiveness for what we've already become somewhat conditioned to.
Now, speaking of the science, I'm sorry, Alex, you have something?
Yeah, I just wanted to jump in on there. There are so many points and great points, I think, that you both really made here where I really wanted to jump in. And if we were in studio, I would have been there with my hand up, right? But it's a different time we're in these days. But, you know, what I was hearing generally from both of you is that there's a misuse of the platform here. There's a misuse of the airtime. We're hearing from idiots when we should be hearing from people who are in the know, people like Dr. Fauci, people like the doctors. Now, I want to read to you and get your thoughts on an article that came out from Bloomberg a little over a week ago. This is the title of the article: Hospitals Tell Doctors They'll Be Fired If They Speak Out About Lack of Gear. Now, let me read you the first paragraph here. Hospitals are threatening to fire healthcare workers who publicize their working conditions during the coronavirus pandemic and have, in some cases, followed through. Ming Lin, an emergency room physician in Washington State, said he was told Friday he was out of a job because he'd given an interview to a newspaper about a Facebook post detailing what he believed to be inadequate protective equipment in testing. In Chicago, a nurse was fired after emailing colleagues that she wanted to wear a more protective mask while on duty. In New York, the NYU Langone Health System has warned employees that they could be terminated if they talk to the media without authorization. I mean, this is something that's very near and dear to our hearts on this program, and I think to the hacker community in general. And it's about getting information out on the one hand and whistleblowing on the other hand. So what do you guys think of that?
I think that's repulsive. The fact that somebody is saying we don't have enough, we are in trouble, they're disciplined for that. It reminds me of the guy on the Navy ship being fired for saying to the Navy that we have a problem. And Alex, you've been affiliated with military people. How does that strike you? Where basically this guy, he didn't leak it to the press. He simply sent a memo to people in the Navy that could do something about this, saying that his sailors were in trouble because 100 of them were infected, and they are on a boat on the high seas, and you know what happens to boats when there's a disease going around, and he was looking out for his men, and they certainly appreciated that. Then you have this idiot come on board and call him stupid and naive to his sailors, who did not receive that very well, and he had to resign as a result of those stupid remarks, which I think he thought weren't going to get out. But yeah, it seems like we live in a society where telling the truth is what gets you in trouble, when the truth is not what the leaders want to hear. I mean, that's some Stalinist regime thought right there, and it's not what I'm used to. I expect the people who tell the truth to be the heroes.
Well, and in the cases right now, they really are, right? I mean, the heroes are the people that are getting up every day and going to work in hospitals, knowing full well that they may not see their children, their friends, their families, their spouses ever again.
Yeah.
That's an incredible amount of dedication, sacrifice, and an obligation that you feel to society and your fellow man that I think is frankly moving. And I think it's great that we started out the program with that cheer for the hospital workers and the medical professionals here. And I really hope that their unions and their employee associations speak out and fight against this type of muzzling of their First Amendment rights. I mean, you're going and putting your life on the line for your fellow countrymen. And this is tantamount to going and fighting a war.
Mm-hmm.
You know, without signing up for it, without the basic training, just medical school or nursing school, whatever it is.
Well, or with the training and just not the equipment that you need to stay safe.
Yeah, I mean, that's one way of looking at it, too, quite frankly. And but you're putting yourself in harm's way, and you should not be muzzled about that. You should be able to discuss very freely your working conditions, the health conditions, the pandemic itself. I mean, if we cannot get information out of hospitals and out of doctors, we're in more serious trouble than we even know about, because we don't know what there is to know. So, I mean, it's just it's another shameful aspect of all of this.
Yeah, this is not a healthy environment to be in. And you may ask, well, what does this have to do with hacking? Well, first of all, computer hackers have always stood up for telling the truth, for leaking information that needs to be heard. And we have never seen a more dire need for the truth than now. So whatever we, help or assistance we can lend to getting the truth out and to helping people in need, we are going to extend all those efforts. That is something that is very near and dear to the hearts of people in the high-tech world, and the people just who believe in the First Amendment and believe in freedom and liberty and all that nice stuff. This is very, very relevant, very, very urgent.
Yeah, to say nothing of how much we're relying on telecommunications, just understanding systems, both how they work normally and in modes of crisis as we're faced with now. And I think that the sort of muzzling of workers or whatnot would be or chilling effect you want to have as an institution would probably be, I don't know, debatable under normal circumstances, depending on what's disclosed and how. But especially in the midst of a crisis like this, I don't think your crisis PR team or whatnot, you know, whomever is going to organize the statements from your hospital or institution is really going to have much control in such a chaotic and tumultuous time. So it's probably the last time to be trying to have like a sort of squeaky image and I think it's probably best to let the union speak, let the people that are on the front lines speak, and share what their needs are widely, because a lot of times when they go through channels that they have, those people aren't listening or they're overwhelmed, and you need side channels and back channels and all hands means all hands, and this is not a normal situation.
No, it's not a drill. All hands on deck. And in the hacker world, we do stand up and we do show up when it counts. And Kyle, you and I had a bit of an adventure doing just that. I want to play some audio from a project that we have been involved in.
All right, so here we are on a pretty empty road, going to pick up some packages. These packages have been sent to us by some volunteers at Operation Masks, and the goal is to get the masks to people in the hospital. So apparently it's easier to have a go-between that will get them to the right people, and that's our job right now, is to pick these up, make sure they're what they're supposed to be, and get them over to Stony Brook University Hospital. Never done this before. It's something. It's an honor to be able to help in some way. All thanks have to go to Bobby Goodlatte and people at Operation Mask for making this possible in the first place. And if we can take care of the last mile, that's the least we can do. And hopefully we can do a lot more, too, in the future. But right now, what we're going to do is go up to the package delivery place. It's insane the way we're living right now. We can't make contact with them. This is all based on our already existing fears, but new information we're getting now that the virus might be spread simply by talking or by breathing. So increasingly, we don't even have conversations with people anymore, even spaced out by a few feet. We communicate from inside the car and have people leave things in our trunk. And that is just the way we have to conduct business for the time being. So that's the plan for picking up these packages.
Are you at all nervous about being near the hospital?
Hell yeah. I mean, yeah. I'm you know, as prone to ignorance as anybody. I felt nervous when we just drove by the hospital the other day with the windows closed. It's stupid. It's irrational. But that's exactly what comes out in times like this. There's you know, if we're going to back up to the place. We're going to call somebody. I'm not going to go inside. So if we can back up, make contact with somebody that will take them out of our trunk, I think that accomplishes everything. And we're not exposing ourselves, and they're getting 100% of the delivery.
Yeah, I think it's just it's ironic that we have to get close to where we might be most exposed to this particular microbe, all to help a system that itself is struggling.
Absolutely. But again, you know, this microbe is not something that's floating around in the air. It's person to person. It's from coughs, sneezes, and maybe from talking and exhaling. But none of that is something we're going to come in contact with inside a car with the windows closed outside. So I'm not really concerned about that. I just want to make sure that's what we do. We simply deliver the packages that way. Okay, we're pulling up to the package place now. So what's the plan? We're going to call them. They're going to or we're going to wave at them. Where do I park here?
I would park here. Side door's open. So what I arranged is I'll wave at the front door, and then they'll come around to the side. I'll be in the car at that point, and I think I'll have cleared the trunk once you open it. So open it as soon as I get out, and I'll clear it and get in the car before they show up. Or maybe I'll clear it before I go to the door.
Well, no, the FedEx guy is taking stuff out right now. Actually, there's two FedEx guys or some other guy. I just don't want you getting too close to any of them. So, and there's a car in front. So why don't we just wait for this car to leave so that you have a clear space?
I'll do what I originally planned on doing but once she moves.
Yeah, wait for the car to leave.
And that buys us time with the FedEx guy that is still loading.
Look at all those packages going out. So a lot of one business that is not hurting is the shipping industry. Boy, packages everywhere. People getting things or sending things. Okay, now this car is leaving. That woman only had her mask on outside, so I guess that makes sense. Now, I stay here or do I pull in front?
As I said, I think you should stay on the side where I originally told the person I'm meeting here that we should, that we could pick up at the side door. I think that's what they're expecting, so let me just wave as I arrange, and then We don't have to dig up phone numbers and do all that kind of thing that we really weren't prepared for.
Okay. I have to dig up a phone number, though, the contact at the hospital. Okay, he's walking around the front now. I guess he's going to wave at them through the window. You know, we got Chinese food the other day. It was like a prisoner exchange at a checkpoint. It was just so crazy, calling them on the phone, arranging a meeting time, gesturing through the window, having them come and bring the food into a neutral area, and then they left the neutral area, and then I came in and got the food. It was just insane. How's the operation going so far, Kyle?
Good. He's aware that we're here and going to bring what we're expecting and anything else out to us.
Okay, that seems to have worked very smoothly. And he's just going to drop them in the trunk. Oh, he's doing it now. I think these masks came from Singapore or somewhere else overseas. All right. I can't imagine what these poor people are going through on a daily basis. So weird and bizarre. Okay, Kyle, so a bit of time has gone by. We actually had to make an appointment to drop all of these masks off, and since then we've gotten another package of more items, which we actually have to tell them about before we drop it off. I'm going to actually give them a call. You have a sheet of paper that says the other things that we have?
Yeah.
I'll dial the number.
Main menu.
Dial number.
Dial number. Please say the number.
Thank you for calling Stony Brook Medicine. A representative will be with you shortly. Okay, hi, how are you?
Good. I just wanted to let you know we received another package. We'd like to drop that off as well. Should I tell you what's in it?
Sure. All right, so you had three boxes of masks and possibly a van full of gowns. That was the last thing that
Yeah,
I had.
The gown's actually being held up by customs, if you can believe that.
I'll
let you know as soon as that clears. But my friend Kyle here has the list in front of him. He's going to read that to you?
Sure.
Go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
He's got a mask on.
Okay.
All right, it's 900
hairnets. 900 hairnets, uh-huh.
1,500 foot covers.
1,500 foot covers?
Yes.
Okay.
350 swabs.
Okay, 350 swabs.
60 goggles.
60 goggles, uh-huh.
And 100 gloves.
So we're going to pull up and give these people all these boxes, and it won't be the last time we do it.
We're not getting out, right?
I'm not sure. We shouldn't have to, but if anyone gets out, it should be you with the mask on.
I'm staying in. We'll pop the trunk. If they can figure out the geometry, I'm staying in, and then they can slam the trunk.
Yeah, I think that's fair, but let's see what they're... We're not going to the hospital. The drop-off point is away from the hospital a bit. And on the paper, we have a packing list for one of the boxes.
Okay.
We just got that one today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Be safe.
Cool.
All right.
Shall we say mission accomplished?
No.
Oh, I feel good. I feel good about doing this.
It's a good system.
Once you understand it, it's a good system, and one we can use frequently in the future. So now that we know the ropes, we'll keep it up as much as we can.
Now let's take care of ourselves and regroup. And, of course, those other boxes may be here any time, right?
Yeah. One shipment is being held up by customs, which is the stupidest thing ever.
Still? Okay, that was from yesterday, and it's...
No, it's from last week, actually.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so working on that, and there's more coming, so we'll get the van out at some point and just do as much as we possibly can. All right, well, that was Kyle and me doing some errands today. I got to tell you, it felt awesome to be able to help out that way, and again, thanks to Bobby Goodlatte and other friends out there all over the world who are helping out, sending supplies, and we are honored and more than happy to take these where they need to go. And I know we're not alone in that. There are people
We've been told this by people at the hospital, how overwhelmed they are by the shows of support that they're getting from the community. That is so important and so inspiring. And I feel just so indebted to people who are this generous and just an honor to be included within it.
Yeah, and it doesn't take much. We're already pretty well suited for logistics and handling all kinds of crazy things, whether it's Club Mate or hoodies or back issues. We're always sending things places. So
everything has ground to a halt. It's all about getting through this.
This is the priority, yeah.
And it's weird because, if I can recall a story, an unusual story from the Freedom Downtime days, when Bernie S. was in prison and he accidentally dropped a metal garbage can lid on top of a prominent mobster's head from the second floor. It was an accident, but he had a tough time convincing people of that. And in that moment, when he thought for sure he was going to be killed by the mob, all the pressure and stress disappeared because it didn't matter anymore. Nothing mattered anymore. And your fate was just simply written in front of you. And all those things that you were worried about, they weren't going to play out. Well, it's not quite as dire. And in fact, it wasn't as dire for him either. But it's not as dire for us because we're going to get through this. But at the same time, we have to be single-minded. And we have to say, this is what we have to be focusing our attention on. And all those trivial little things that mattered so much a few weeks ago, they'll be there when we come back. But right now, they don't matter. What matters is getting through this, taking care of each other, staying sane, and emerging all the better. Hey, Alex, I don't know, were you able to hear that that remote?
I was, and I'm incredibly... I guess maybe not impressed is the word, but it gave me great heart to hear what you did. I'll put it that way. And I think extraordinarily laudable. And I always thought that, you know, you were very good with sort of logistics and supplies. And, you know, maybe after this whole thing is done, you can become a long haul trucker.
Hey, you know, I would be honored to be a long-haul trucker. Those are some of the biggest heroes in this country, I think.
I totally agree. But
seriously, all I did was drive packages from one place to another. But something as simple as that matters. And your actions matter, how you talk to other people. You can make somebody feel better today. You can inspire somebody tomorrow. Everything we do counts, and don't ever think that you don't matter, that you're insignificant. Times like this, where so many people don't have access to all the cool gizmos that they usually have access to, or being able to go from one place to another, it's all kind of an equalizer. We're all kind of having to figure it out together and go through the same things ourselves. We are never going to forget this. This is something people will talk about for centuries. And we're a part of it now, so let's make the most of it and get through it in as good a shape and make things better when it's over. You know, I'm looking outside and I see how clear the sky looks, how, you know, the ground fog from pollution isn't around as much, how you can hear at night without the constant sound of cars. So I think there are things like that that we'll see the positivity of, and maybe that'll inspire us to learn something about how we can improve our environment, and maybe this will be a good step towards fighting climate change as well.
That adaptability, I think, is the essence of the human and also the hacker spirit in so many regards. So it's truly... it's what we're doing and what so many other people are doing as we speak, to adapt and continue to be a part of their community. And it's becoming ever more important that local aspect is ever more important. It's really about your proximity, and I think that's where you can be most effective long term, especially for this next couple weeks and months.
Could I ask you guys a question too? I mean, I agree with all of this too, and I find myself just being, you know, sort of reminiscent about, you know, just very small things. And maybe it's because I haven't, you know, seen my family in a couple of weeks, but just the tiny small things, you know, about the human interaction and human contact that that you miss, and you just realize that you took so much of life for granted. And I know for all of us that go through this, we will never, ever take all of those small things for granted ever again. But what I wanted to ask you is, I find myself, you know, watching TV at night and seeing scenes where people are hugging or shaking hands. And I look at it and it sort of inspires this, like, this visceral reaction in me where I think, oh, my God, that's dangerous what they're doing. They just shook hands together. Uh-huh. Or those people kissed. They barely know each other. They met on the street. What the hell are they doing?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a weird feeling. Are you getting that at all when you're watching TV from the past?
Yeah, and I also think what a simpler time that was, where we didn't have to worry about the things we worry about today, or just didn't think about them. But yes, I think everyone is going through that. My God, stay out of that crowd. Or you're watching a baseball game or a soccer game, and you see crowds, stadiums full of people, and you wonder, are we ever going to go back to that? Are we ever going to have a situation like this? And we will, but are we ever going to think of it in the same way? Maybe that's a good thing. Maybe we'll be more careful. Maybe we'll be more hygienic, or you know, basically take care of ourselves better. I don't know. It's definitely going to change who we are.
I've had some little, like, glints and small moments of that, but I've been trying, I've been much more about the occurring, like what's in front of me and what's ahead, and how to be as prepared for what's ahead as possible. I find being wistful in that way, it's kind of depressing when you do snap back to what you have to face to survive in the here and now. So I've been kind of avoiding it, to be quite honest. As far as, you know, reminiscing too much over little things, I remember them, and I do have those things come up, right? They surface, and you maybe get sort of wistful in that way. But it just, I can't dwell on it in function at the same time.
We said we were going to try and take phone calls. Let's try and do that again. Phone number, our special phone number, 802-321-HACK. 802-321-4225 is our telephone number. Be patient with us, because there's a lot that we have to still work out. And also, we're using Google, so it doesn't actually work that well. Last week, a lot of calls wound up going to voicemail, even though they didn't ring here. They also went to the wrong place sometimes. But we're doing the best we can. And Alex, I'm not sure you'll be able to hear the calls. You might be able to. We might get some bizarre echo. Let's try our first one.
Sounds good.
And good evening. You're on the radio. Can you hear us? Please turn down your radio or whatever you're listening on. Can you hear us? Okay. Well, you can't just call and not say anything. All right, hanging up on that one. Again, our phone number is 802-321-HACK, 802-321-4225. At least we know the dialing in part works.
If you've been involved in any kind of technology-related project, you've observed some technology or telecommunications-related things, especially in the midst of this crisis, sounds like a lot of people have.
A lot of people are calling now. Well, I made the mistake of turning the volume up. Okay, let's just take one phone call and see what happens. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Speak up. Can you hear me? Wow. I'm hitting the right thing, right? Yeah, my volume is up on the computer, so there's no reason this shouldn't work. No, I think we're doing everything right. But is anyone there? Okay, we're gonna hang up on this phone.
How about now?
Well, you made noise, but I don't think there was a problem. Might be a problem now, but there wasn't a problem before. 802-321-4225. Keep trying that number.
Yeah, the more I mess with things, it's just a recipe for disaster.
Exactly.
But patching back through to your calling application may be what is hanging us up.
Here. Alex, could you hear the echo of that other caller who didn't speak?
I could, actually.
Okay,
yes.
Good. So that means you'll be able to hear the caller. Now the question is, will the caller be able to hear you? See, folks, you know, you're part of the experiment here. If you call in and actually talk to us, then we might be able to see if this thing works, and we could take more calls next week.
That's what I was just messing with. I'm so nervous about this. But, yeah, why don't we try if someone else is willing to experiment.
I think now we're having Google problems because the calls are going to the wrong place.
Oh.
They should be going to the right place. Keep trying, folks. If you get voicemail, hang up, try again. 802-321-HACK, 802-321-4225. This is all new to us. We're doing this from a remote location. We're doing live radio from far away. And we're learning a lot. We're learning a lot. And WBAI folks have been really pitching in and keeping the place running. Never have we realized how important local radio is, and we got a phone call. Oh, good. Good evening. You're on the radio.
Yes.
Can you hear us?
Yes, how you doing? I'm glad you came through this time. That was just kept, I kept calling back. I know it's new.
Okay, well, I'm glad you made it. Alex, can you hear the caller?
I can, actually. This is wonderful.
Caller, can you hear Alex?
I can hear Alex.
Oh, wow. Okay, now, we have no more work to do. We're done. Caller, what is on your mind?
Hey, what's going on? This is Jay from Harlem. Yeah, so my big thing is the TVs and with the cameras and all the stuff that they can watch you and hack and stuff like that. So I know there's certain brands. Well, I think there's certain brands that don't do that. Like, in other words, when you first buy it, it's already off. You have to turn it on to engage it, but I think most brands, it is on and you have to go in and disengage it. So I'm really concerned about that, and I just was wondering what you guys, you know, well, I would specifically want to know which brands is it off. Those are the brands I want to buy.
Yeah, so it depends on exactly what you're talking about, if it's a piece of hardware or a service. That's a good way to break it down. And then like you're saying, how much granularity, how much control for that service or for that piece of hardware do you have? And oftentimes, like you said, that hardware might have the camera on by default. And to disable it, you may or may not have that level of control. And that goes for services as well. So it's the first thing you want to look at is not really. I mean, the agreement, you have to kind of agree if it's a service. But hardware specifically, is there a switch? Is there a setting where you can mute it by default or have it not send telemetry or like logs back to the manufacturer? Stuff like that is key when you're setting up something. And do a little homework, like what have other people said? Emmanuel's always talking about finding good reviews for things, which I'm terrible at. But reviews, there's a lot in between the lines when people are reviewing things. So little tips like that. It's like kind of that Consumer Reports research we were talking about last week.
Thank you for that call. Our phone lines are open again, 802-321-4225. 802-321-HACK is our phone number. You know, speaking of technology and rumors and craziness, you hear about 5G towers being burned down because people are convinced they cause coronavirus? You've heard this, right?
Well, I think the conspiracy is that it's weakening our immune systems, I guess we would say, because of the physics of the phased array antennas and the amount of energy they emit. It somehow damages the immune system, and that's making us more susceptible to this particular virus because it's so contagious. I think that's how it goes, but I haven't actually looked into the conspiracy theory. But yes, 5G antennas are being attacked as a backlash to their sort of implied involvement as insofar as the conspiracy goes. Is that correct?
Hate crimes against inanimate objects. It's unbelievable. 5G has nothing to do with coronavirus. That's number one.
And what's more, the healthcare workers and the first responders are probably using a lot of those communication towers one way or another, sending information, locating vehicles for dispatch purposes. All kinds of things are probably transitioning to the communications technology, or the very towers that are serving the new technology are backwards compatible with all of the older technology, so that even the people keeping their older phones would be disrupted by these kinds of attacks. So it's kind of crazy. This is stuff where you need to be talking to your standards bodies and the FCC more so than just attacking hardware, because they'll just build another one.
That is true. You know, calls just keep bypassing us. I don't know where they're going, but I'm gonna turn this thing off here and see if maybe that does a better job. I see so many calls that we've missed, so I know we're getting calls, but only one in like 50 gets to us. So that's kind of crazy. But let's try it again. 802-321-HACK, 802-321-4225. If we don't get any more that actually make it to us this week, we'll try earlier next week. But again, on the subject of 5G, I'm not saying there aren't any potential health issues with the technology itself, just like with 4G, with any kind of emission from something you hold next to your head. But to say that it causes this is just the height of stupidity, and it's something I expect from Trump. I don't expect it from citizens.
Yeah, it's kind of for a direct correlation. I don't know. I guess you could go down that maybe, but it just running down that road, it just seems more like a really unfortunate timing, and it is really unfortunate timing for all kinds of new products. So getting people to buy in at a moment like this, I don't know. It's really ripe for that kind of accusation, because everybody's looking for something to blame for this.
Okay, we have to fix this whole phone setup here. All the hardware here is working, but Google is just routing our calls to the wrong place. We'll work on that some more. Thanks everybody who called in. And okay, now we're getting a call, but I'm sorry. It sounds so nice, but we're out of time. And we'll be back next week, though, with another exciting program with all kinds of new information. Hopefully things will start getting better then. We'll see. Alex, I hope you continue to improve, and you're going to see your family before next week, right?
Yeah, I very much hope so. That'll be something new to report next week.
All right. Well, for those of you stuck in New York, hey, make the most of it. We're going to get through this. City is strong, and we're going to be stronger than ever. See you next time. Good night.
This city won't wash away. This city will never drown. Blood and water and hell to pay. Sky tear open, pain rain down. Doesn't matter, it's come when may. I ever won't leave this town. This city won't wash away. This city won't ever drown. Ain't the river or the wind to blame. It's everybody around here knows. Nothing holding back, bunch of trains. A poor prayer and a promise is ghost. We just can't.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is working to help keep you and your community safe from the threat of novel or new coronavirus. Take the following everyday steps to help avoid the spread of all respiratory viruses. Wash your hands often with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. Cover your cough or sneeze with a tissue. Throw the tissue away and then wash your hands. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects or surfaces, such as remote controls and doorknobs. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. And stay home if you are sick. Call your healthcare provider if you develop fever, cough, or difficulty breathing. For more tips, visit cdc.gov.
I'm Leonard Lopate, the host of Leonard Lopate at Large, broadcast weekdays from 1 to 2 p.m. on WBAI New York 99.5 FM and streaming on the web at WBAI.org. There's no shortage of music for the holidays. Even Thanksgiving has Alice's Restaurant, but there's a lot of great Easter music as well, especially if you're talking about one of my favorite genres. Join me this Good Friday at 1 p.m. when I'll present a holiday special featuring classic Easter recordings from the golden age of black gospel music. That's this Good Friday from 1 to 2 p.m. on WBAI. Be sure not to miss it.
I shall know him. The CIA's MK Ultra program may be among the agency's most criminal projects. On the next alternative radio, hear Stephen Kinzer on the CIA search for mind control. That's Alternative Radio, heard Saturdays at 7 p.m. right here on WBAI, 99.5 FM New York, and streaming live at WBAI.org.
I'm New York City Health Commissioner Dr. Oxides Barbeau. As the city's doctor, I have an urgent plea to New Yorkers on behalf of all the healthcare professionals fighting the COVID-19 outbreak. Stay home. When you go out, you risk contracting or spreading coronavirus to others. Even if you're young and healthy, you can spread the virus to someone at risk of serious illness and even death. When you do go out for essentials like groceries or medicine, maintain a safe distance between yourselves and others. Try for 6 feet, whether it's on the sidewalk or in a checkout line at the store. I know it's not easy. We're New Yorkers and we love to be out in our city. But we have to change how we live quickly if we're going to slow the spread of the virus and stand a fighting chance to save our families and our neighbors. On behalf of everyone working day and night in our hospitals and clinics, I am asking you to do your part. Stay home to save lives.
Once every 10 years, America mounts a census and attempts to count every single person living in the country, citizens and non-citizens, immigrants, documented and undocumented alike. This is an extremely difficult goal, even under ideal circumstances. And even as the actions of the current U.S. government has created fear and uncertainty that all but ensures that many immigrants will stay in the shadows, too terrified to risk contact with any governmental official, census takers included. However, by law, namely Title 13 of the U.S. Code, the Census Bureau cannot release any information about you, your business, or your immigration status to law enforcement. So step out of the shadows, stand up and be counted. This is a public service of WBAI Community Outreach.
All right. You are tuned to WBAI New York and WBFW in Washington, D.C. The previous program for WBAI was Off the Hook, and that is heard Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Stay tuned for Exploration, both WBAI and WPFW, as we continue on with the broadcast day. And just remember, what we do here at WBAI as well as WPFW, we serve the community to the best of our ability. We do not prescribe to fear-mongering or hate-mongering when it comes to programming in regards to COVID-19 and beyond. Just remember that. We are community radio, all of us together. Now stay tuned for Explorations with Michio Kaku coming up.
Welcome. Once again, this is Dr. Michio Kaku, Professor of Theoretical Physics at the City University of New York, and this is a special edition of Exploration. Last week, we began a discussion of the science behind the current coronavirus catastrophe. First of all, I should say that I am not a medical doctor. I do not have a PhD in bioengineering. However, I do have a PhD in theoretical physics, and we theoretical physicists pretty much invented computer modeling. That's where it comes from. We physicists use computer modeling to model the atmosphere, to model rockets, to model explosions, to model stars. And so we will be talking today about the science, not the therapeutics, but the science behind the coronavirus. And if you want to get on Exploration in the next 20 minutes, to ask a question, then give us a call. The hotline number is this. Write this down. 212 209-2877. Once again, we're talking about the science of the coronavirus today at 212-209-2877. First of all, let me rapidly recap what we talked about last week. First of all, where did the coronavirus come from? Where does its name come from? Why does it have that strange shape? Well, the corona is basically the luminous surrounding of a bright object like the sun. The sun's atmosphere surrounds the sun, and it's called the corona, like the corona of the coronavirus. That's where it comes from. But that's also the reason why it's so deadly. These spikes on the surface of the coronavirus are docking ports. They allow the virus to latch on to cells. And then they have two genes. One gene is the docking gene that allows the spike protein to latch on to your cells in your lungs. The second gene is like a can opener. It rips open the surface of our cells. The virus then injects its RNA into our cells, hijacking the reproductive mechanism, creating hundreds of copies. So from just one molecule, you can get trillions of molecules just within a matter of a few days. And that's why we have to be very careful about this virus. Then the next question is, where did it come from? Well, we think it came from Wuhan in China, but why Wuhan? Well, the theory goes that there's a wet market that sells in exotic animals. Now, why is that important? Roughly 60% or so of diseases come from the animal kingdom. You see, humans are only about 100,000, maybe 200,000 years old. Animals go back millions of years into the past, and many of these germs and viruses are ancient. They've infected other animals for millennia and millions of years until we trespass on the home territory of these ancient diseases. Then they mutate, and then they hop on to humans. Now, this is actually common throughout the animal kingdom, that's where most diseases come from. The hantavirus, which affects the Midwest, the Legionnaire's disease, even HIV, we think originated in animals, mutated, and crossed over into human beings. Now, then the next question is, was it bioengineered? Well, it can't be ruled out, but people who have taken apart the genome of the coronavirus found something very important. As I mentioned, there are two key genes that the coronavirus has. One gene is a docking gene. It allows to dock onto the cells in your lung. The second gene is a can opener gene, splits open the cell wall, injects its genetic material, hijacking our genetic machinery. It turns out that when you look at these genes, they're novel. They're quite different. They're not what a malicious conspiracy theorist would cook up. In other words, it's something that is probably, though we can't be sure, a byproduct of Darwinian evolution. People who looked at the mutation say that usually a conspirator would take a known virus like SARS, tweak it here, tweak it there, hoping to weaponize it. That's how you weaponize diseases. However, there are several novel diseases in ways that we didn't anticipate. And so we think, though we cannot prove, that it probably was not bioengineered, but probably crossed over from the wet markets. The origin of the conspiracy theory, however, is because of the fact that there's not one, but two virology institutes right outside the city of Wuhan. So is it a coincidence? Is it a coincidence that China would have not one, but two major laboratories right next to one of the major wet marketplaces, which deals in animals, exotic animals? We think that the virus that gave birth to this was the horseshoe bat virus. It then infected the pangolin, which then infected humans, because humans will eat and trade in the pangolins. We should also mention that this is one of the reasons why many of the flu influenza viruses come from Asia. In China and also throughout Asia, there's something called polyfarming, where Asian farmers live in very close proximity to birds and pigs, like ducks, for example. The pigs eat the bird droppings. We eat the pigs. And these viruses originate in birds. You can take apart their RNA and DNA, and you find they originate in birds. But pigs act as a mixing bowl to mix the genes of these birds with the pigs and also with humans, somewhat like what the pangolin did. We think that it was a mixing bowl that mixed the DNA of the horseshoe bat and the pangolin. But, of course, this is still something that's being investigated right now. Now, the next question I often get is, what actually kills you? I mean, it's a molecule. COVID-19, it's a molecule. It's not even alive. Does it kill you? It's so tiny. How can a molecule kill you? Well, the answer is very simple. It doesn't kill you at all. Something else kills you. And we know that because scientists went to Canada and Alaska, dug up the graves of those people that died during the pandemic of 1918 because of the Spanish flu, dug up the corpses, extracted genetic material, reconstructed the entire genome of the Spanish flu virus of 1918, which killed more people than World War I. It is one of the greatest killers in the history of the entire human race. Why was it so deadly? The flu virus of 1918 did not kill young people and old people. That's what the coronavirus does, kills old people mainly. But the flu virus of 1918 was different. It killed healthy people in their prime. The bedwinners were knocked out within just a matter of days once they were infected. And why did it kill so many people in 1917, 1918? Because it elicited an immune response that overwhelmed the body, and the body literally drowned for lack of oxygen. Now, the same thing more or less applies to the coronavirus, and that is it attacks organs, leading to organ failure. It will also attack or give you pneumonia, but it also elicits a tremendous immune response, and so you basically drown in your own bodily fluids, and that's why you're put on ventilators. Why is everyone talking about ventilators? Because what do ventilators do? They give you oxygen. Because your body is being flooded by fluids, you're choking. You're literally choking in your own bodily fluids because your body is not getting enough oxygen. And that's what the ventilators do. They force oxygen down into your lungs. Unfortunately, it's kind of a haphazard method. And 80% of those people who go on ventilators eventually die. So the next question is, why was there so much confusion even today about the coronavirus, how dangerous it is? Should you wear masks? What's the origin of all this confusion? Well, there's a lot of finger-pointing going on, but look, there's plenty of blame to distribute to everybody involved. First of all, the first finger of blame points to China. In other words, the Chinese Communist Party sat on data which showed that the virus could go from human to human. It issued a report saying that it could not go from animals. It could not go from human to humans. It only goes from animals to animals. And then the World Health Organization parroted that result and also said that basically it's spread by droplets in the air. So you only have to, for example, separate yourself by 6 feet. We now know that both were, in some sense, wrong. The virus is very contagious, and it's quite lethal. Compared to the flu virus, for example, some of the early investigators thought it was like the SARS virus. But you see, it's different. SARS virus is contagious only after the symptoms form. We now know that up to 50% of those people who are infected with the coronavirus can, in fact, spread the disease, even though they are asymptomatic. That was a shock. So the next question is, does the 6 feet really work? Well, there's a paper from MIT which says that maybe you have to self-distance by 27 feet. What's the origin of this discrepancy? Should it be 6 feet or 27 feet? And, of course, the destiny of nations may depend upon the answer to that question. Well, again, it goes back to the SARS virus. People thought that the coronavirus, because SARS is also a coronavirus, that they would have very similar methods of transmission through droplets. When you sneeze, these droplets, for the most part, fall to the floor within 6 feet. But there's also something called aerosols. Aerosols like perfume and smoke. If you ever smoke in a room or use perfume in a room, you know that the perfume and the smoke could easily fill up an entire room effortlessly.